The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning and welcome. This is the Dr. Trudy Pratt Show, Positively Healthy, and I'm Henry Cuenca. My show is about passion and inspiration. We examine lives of people who are driven by a compelling sense of purpose that make a difference. Our call-in number is 530-605-4567. Our first guests have endured one of the most feared events in any parent's life, the death of a child. Their daughter, Alyssa, died at the age of 3 of cancer. These parents endured significant struggle in trying to maintain normalcy for their other child, their work activity, finances, continuing care to their daughter in an out-of-the-area hospital. It was by living and enduring these very difficult challenging times, the inspiration for formation of Wings of Angels was sealed. Donna and Dan Ariza, I'd like to welcome you to my show this morning.
Good morning, Henry. Thank you for having us.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Thank you. Most of us can't even imagine the loss of a child. Could you tell us a little bit about your lifestyle and your life dynamics before your cancer manifested in your daughter?
Well, Dan and I were lucky enough to have two daughters. We had Carrie, and 2.5 years later, we had Alyssa. And we are a family that pretty much did everything together. The only time we were ever apart was when we were at work, and we never put our kids in daycare other than that. We had just the normal life, what everybody, you know, dreamed of. The kids going to school, playing soccer, playing softball, and that type of stuff, and us coaching basketball for the YMCA for our girls. And when Alyssa was 9 when she passed away, but when Alyssa was 4 years old, she was diagnosed with the leukemia.
Mm-hmm. And how did that news strike you both, Dan?
It tears a family apart. When you learn something like this, your heart drops out from you. I mean, it's so devastating. You have to walk the walk to understand what really happens to a family. Mm-hmm. When you get news like this, it can break a man down quick.
I would imagine so. Tell us a little bit about yourselves, where you're from, and how you two met.
Well, I grew up in Alturas, and when I graduated high school, I moved here to Reading, and I went to work for the city of Reading, and I was living in a little apartment complex when Dan moved into that complex, and we met at that apartment building and started going out, and we've been together ever since, and that's been 30 years ago.
30 years. You don't look that old, Dan.
Thank God.
And Dan, a little bit about your background, where you're from.
I'm a local boy. I grew up here, went to Cottonwood Schools, graduated Anderson High School. Mm-hmm. I was in the golf business. I started working at Riverview Country Club when I was only 15 years old, mm-hmm. and I spent 30 years in the golf industry. And now I do security for the high schools.
Oh, I see. I got you. And your daughter, Carrie, is about 20 years old now, 22 years old. Is she still in the area?
Carrie will actually be 22 next month, and she still lives here locally. She works at Mary's Pizza Shack over here, and she also works up at McDonald's. So she's a hard worker.
Good, like you two folks.
I hope so.
Can you tell us at the moment the emotions that you ran through the moment that your daughter was diagnosed with leukemia?
Well, Henry, you know, when Alyssa was diagnosed, unfortunately, just prior to her being diagnosed, I had gone through cancer. And when I went through it, we thought it was a death sentence. And obviously, afterwards, I had Alyssa, and when she was diagnosed, it was really tough on us, but we kind of hoped it was just a bump in the road like I had. And for us, it was a bump in the road in the beginning. She went through 2.5 years of chemotherapy, and then she was considered cancer-free. And we thought our life was going to be back to normal, and everything would be perfect again. And unfortunately, 16 months later, the cancer reared its nasty head to us again, and Alyssa relapsed. And when that happened, I think that was the point when I was absolutely devastated. At that point, we were looking at having to go through a bone marrow transplant. And we were very blessed by the fact that Carrie, our older daughter, was a perfect match. And so we went through bone marrow transplant, and Alyssa went through a perfect bone marrow transplant. So at that point, again, we thought, we've dodged another bullet, and everything is going to be good. And she relapsed again, and we went through the stem cell transplant. And, you know, at that point, we knew things were not going to be well for us. And it was
just a very devastating time. I want to ask you a little bit about your cancer bout. And right after the break, so we do need to take a break. And this is KCNR 1460, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media.
Hi, I'm Vicki Leda from Orchard Nutrition Center. For 30 years, our family-owned business has been Redding's premier choice for health foods, produce, bulk foods, and the best nutritional supplements. We pride ourselves on offering many locally produced foods. Our products are good for you and easy on your pocketbook. Orchard Nutrition Center, 221 Locust in the Cypress Shopping Center, open every day, 8 to 9.
What do you look for in a building contractor? Experience and quality, and someone who's reliable? Dennis Janeway hits the mark. Dennis has got more than 30 years' experience doing all types of construction. So whether the job is big or small, new home construction or a kitchen or bathroom remodel, call Dennis Janeway today at 604-6702. For experience, quality, and reliability, call Dennis Janeway Construction, 604-6702.
Hello, folks. I'm Bob, the Mount Shasta Springwater Drop. It's no wonder that Mount Shasta Springwater is the preferred choice here in Northern California and Southern Oregon. It's natural, it tastes good, and it's healthy for you. If you are not drinking Mount Shasta Springwater, you owe it to yourself to give it a try. Give us a call at 1-800-922-6227 and start enjoying the refreshing taste of Mount Shasta Springwater today. When you call, tell them you want the Bob the Drop special. Mount Shasta Springwater, naturally the best.
Hi, it's Charlie Thompson. I'm here to get out the word on CVAC, Shasta County Veterans Affiliated Council. We're a county-sponsored organization of all Shasta Veterans Service Groups. In fact, if you're a veteran or veterans group, you may already be a member. To learn more, visit us on the web at scvac.us. That's scvac.us. And then join us at a quarterly meeting and see how you can get more involved supporting your fellow vets. CVAC. Veterans helping veterans.
Welcome back. This is Henry Cuenca, and my guests this morning are Dan and Donna Arizia. And we were talking about, Donna, that you yourself had cancer. Can you tell us a little bit about that, when this occurred and so forth?
I was actually diagnosed with breast cancer at 32, and it was the day after our oldest daughter's first birthday. And, you know, again, like I said, it was devastating, and I didn't think I would be here to watch her grow up. And yeah, I went through my chemo, I went through my radiation and my surgeries and that, and I was immediately, well, Dan and I were told we would never have any other children and that Carrie would be the one. And immediately after finishing my treatment, I was pregnant with Alyssa. And we felt so blessed, and again, our life was back to being perfect, and we had everything that we could ever imagine having. We had two healthy daughters, and I was healthy again, and everything was going well. And when Alyssa was 4 years old is when she was diagnosed. And, you know, that was extremely hard. It was extremely hard for me. I carried a lot of guilt, feeling that I was responsible for it was because of me.
How do you communicate to your daughter the severity of the situation?
When Alyssa was younger, I don't know that there was so much of an understanding of it. I mean, she knew she was sick, and that she understood she had cancer, because I could remember in preschool her going to a teacher and telling the teacher that she had cancer, and the teacher didn't believe it because she looked so well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so like I said, we went through it, and I don't know how much she understood until later on. And later on, I can remember talking to her when we were in bone marrow transplant and telling her everything would be okay. And
you know, the thing about children is they're so resilient. when children are sick, it doesn't matter, you know, how they are. When you ask a child, you know, how do you feel today? Almost all the kids that I have ever been around and dealt with, they're always good. Almost all the answers. Anytime you ask a child how you're doing, how do you feel? Mm-hmm. I'm good.
Yeah,
I'm
fine. You're right. Resilience is the right word.
And that's where we drew our strength from. And a lot of our strength comes from these sick children. When you're around these sick children and like our daughter, and they're going through what they're going through, all the pain they're suffering and everything they do, and you ask them, how do you feel? I'm good. I'm fine. Mm-hmm. And so when adults and other people are going through stuff in their life and going through stuff in your life, and you look at these children and what they're having to endure, you think, well, what I'm going through is minor. It, you know, I shouldn't be complaining at all about what's going on with me.
Right. I know that Alyssa was a real champion, the way that she endured this whole process. And in fact, you kind of called her that she was the boss of the family. Can you share with us those intricate personal dynamics that were going on?
In many ways, she was the boss, because we asked her a lot of things, and whether or not she wanted to do something. And when Alyssa had relapsed that last time, and we asked her if she wanted to go through a transplant again, she's going, yeah, I want to do it again. Let's do it again. And it's funny, because before we had ever even lost her, that last 14 months, we spent so much time at the hospital. We were in the hospital for basically 6 months, Alyssa. And so we spent a lot of time with other families seeing what they were going through. And we talked to Alyssa about being doing this foundation to help other people in her name, and that she would be the boss.
Oh,
and
wonderful.
She
understood.
Oh, yeah. She knew she was going to be the boss of something that was going to help other children.
Tell us about the difficulty in having a child in this condition, but having to go out of the area to provide the care and maintain the family and so forth.
That's where we drew from, was watching these other families and our family alone, watching them and what they're having to go through. I've seen single moms, you know, with two or three kids, and one of the children are sick, and they're down there alone with nobody around them.
Down there being
I touched with you earlier, is Reading doesn't treat oncology. Almost all the families, when you get a child to become seriously ill with cancer, they have to travel out of the area.
Really? That's pretty much carte blanche then.
It is.
Yeah, all of our kids right now, and right now we're sponsoring 25 children. And in sponsoring 25 children, what that means is those families, every month, we send them a minimum of $100 worth of gas. We send them a grocery cart and that. These families, all of our families, there is not one of them that is being treated local.
Family. Essentially, every child that contracts or has cancer,
yes,
is going to be treated out of the area. Now, I noticed that you refer to these as your family. I mean, that sounds like a very warm, affectionate way to describe them.
You become part of their families. You get to know these families, and you talk to them, and you consult with them, and you become friends with them,
mm-hmm,
and they look to you for guidance.
Well, sure. Now, what sort of challenges did you meet, or does one meet, that has where a child is being treated out of the area? What are the basic challenges that that folks?
For one, you take a local family that's from a little country town. And
Reading,
Cottonwood, right. Anderson. Uh-huh. We got children from Altura, Siskiyou County, up in Yreka.
So your foundation serves those areas, then, I guess.
Yes, we do. This county and the surrounding counties.
Right.
But you take a little country family like that, and you put them in the heart of San Francisco, and it is so intimidating for these families.
No question.
And so, not only that, you've got the fact that you've now got a separated family, and where one of the parents is staying in San Francisco, in Palo Alto, Sacramento, whatever, with the sick child, then dad or mom, one of them, is staying at home with the rest of the family.
So this is not a one-day deal where a parent, I mean, it sounds like you as a parent, you were down in the San Francisco for weeks at a time.
We were there for months at a time.
Months at a time.
Months at a time.
And what sort of struggles did that impose on you?
You know, Henry, that's where Dan and I were very fortunate. And, you know, ultimately we didn't have success in saving Alyssa. But Dan and I were lucky in that he was able to keep his job. He was able to stay home, care for our other daughter, make sure everything here was taken care of. And I was so blessed because for 34 years I've worked for the city of Reading. And while I was off, my coworkers donated their vacation time to me.
Wow,
and
for 14 months,
I've never heard of that. I never missed a payday
wow.
in 14 months.
What an inspiration. We're going to need to take our break, but I want to continue this dialogue again. This is KCNR 1460, Shasta Reading, the home of Free Fire Media, and we're going to be right back.
Today, most beef and poultry products come from factory farms, from animals raised in confinement, fed antibiotics, and genetically modified organisms. Fortunately, there's a local source of humanely raised grass-fed beef, organic chickens, and pastured free-range eggs. The Martin family at the Lazy 69 Ranch near Round Mountain wants you to get back in touch with your food and your farmer. Look for Lazy 69 products at Orchard Nutrition, Holiday Market, Sunset Market, or online at lazy69ranch.com.
Crown Motors presents the NorCal Boat Sport and RV Show at the Shasta District Fairgrounds now through Sunday. For every sport enthusiast, this is the one event of the year not to be missed. It's acres of fun and entertainment for any and all sportsmen and women, featuring the latest in sport and recreation accessories, displays, demonstrations, and once-a-year-only show prizes. Boats, motorhomes, campers, trailers, guides, resorts, marinas, personal watercraft, wildlife art, fishing tackle, guns, auto accessories, camping and RV accessories, plus kids' trout fishing pond, bass bin fishing demos, Dutch oven and barbecue cook-off, and the Northwest Big Game Taxidermy display this year featuring a life-size bison and bear. Attention hunters, bring in your horns to be officially scored at the display in Passaro Hall. Hundreds of exhibits, exclusive show prizes, houseboat giveaway, splash dog competition, backcountry horseman, gunner, the Clydesdale, and much more. There's something for everyone now through Sunday at the 25th Annual NorCal Boat Sport and RV Show at the Shasta District Fairgrounds. Sponsored in part by KRCR News Channel 7, North Valley Bank, and Coors Light, and this radio station.
Buongiorno, how are you? This is Luigi Bianco. It's time for the Festa again.
Now, Kathleen, hey, don't miss the 33rd annual Festa Italiana, March 10th. We're going to have Dan St. Paul as this year's comedian, and there'll be dancing to Lou White and the band.
That's right, I'll be there. Good food, good company, and that Dago red wine. No, you don't have to be Italian to come to this thing. You don't even have to know where Italy is on the map. Just come and have a good time. You have to be over 21.
For tickets, give me a call. That's Kathleen White, 359-2078.
Do you have neck, shoulder, or back pain? Did you know that acupuncture can help? The experts at Reading Acupuncture Healthcare can treat all these problems and so much more. Acupuncture is a virtually painless therapy that's been used in China for over 1,000 years. It stops pain by stimulating the production of pain-killing endorphins while improving blood flow to the area of pain. Reading Acupuncture Healthcare has 2 experienced acupuncturists with over 25 years of combined experience. Reading Acupuncture is the largest acupuncture clinic in Shasta County and offers the most extensive selection of Chinese herbs, teas, books, and aromatherapy products in their herbal pharmacy. Reading Acupuncture Healthcare is conveniently open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Tuesdays and Thursdays until 7 p.m. We also have Saturday appointments available for your convenience. If you or a loved one have pain that prevents you from enjoying life to the fullest, then call today for a free consultation at 223-2346. Reading Acupuncture Healthcare is in the Rayleigh's Cobblestone Shopping Center on Hartnell. Call today, 223-2346.
Welcome back. This is Henry Cuenca, and I am interviewing Donna and Dan Ariza, founders of Wings of Angel Foundation. And Donna, what we were talking about is the stress that is added on families whose children are being treated in out of the area. Tell us specifically what kinds of things that happen. What sort of pressures are put on to the family?
Well, obviously, when you're separated like that, and like I said, I would spend a month or longer at the hospital with Alyssa. There was the challenges of Dan, obviously, having to drive down to the city every week to come down and visit with us. And so there's the expense of that. And then there's me at the hospital with Alyssa for a month on end. And, you know, you have to go to the cafeteria and you have to buy food there. You have to pay for parking in the city.
And I imagine a lot of people don't really have two cars, which is an enormous stress. And your foundation has really helped the community, helped you in that specific area.
we've been really fortunate to, in that respect, and that we've actually purchased a couple of cars for families. And here just this past month, we had North Valley Bank, who was so absolutely generous to us, that donated two of their fleet vehicles from their bank to us for us to give to families. And you know, we've got one family that now, because of them, they've got a car that they can get back and forth to Sacramento.
And without a car, it would be absolutely almost impossible to continue life.
We had one family that was riding the Greyhound bus home from the hospital after treatment.
Wow.
And that was, you know, to think of this little girl sitting on a Greyhound bus, just fresh out of the hospital treatment, you know, that was just really big for us to get going and help them out.
Absolutely. So during this entire process, the idea of Wings of Angels came to you. Tell us about that, how you made this idea, this vision, into a reality to help other families.
Well, yeah, we wanted to be able to help other families. But, you know, Henry, in the very beginning, we wanted to do something not only to help local families. We wanted to give back to a community that was so generous to us. But if you're a parent that's ever lost a child, the one thing that you never want to think is that your child will be forgotten. And we thought if we could do something positive out of what had happened to us, that what Alyssa went through and what she taught us would be such a valuable thing for our community and for us. And it would be a healing process. So in the beginning, that's kind of where my passion came. But now, over the years, the passion has changed. And it's coming now, and Dan and I talked about it the other day. It comes from that phone call. It comes from that family that just found out their child has cancer, and they need someone to talk to because they don't have any idea where that road is going. And it comes from that phone call from the mom or dad whose child just relapsed.
And you have 23 families, is that correct?
We have 25 families.
Families that you're serving.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, and then unfortunately there's that phone call from the family that just lost their child. And Dan and I endured four of those in 10 weeks last 3 months. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those are the things that make me want to do this.
Absolutely. Tell us more about your foundation and how our listeners can reach out to you.
We have a web page, Wings of Angels, Alyssa's wingsofangels.org, or you can just punch in Wings of Angels Reading, and that'll take you to our website.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been referred to, you know, by social workers, word of mouth, you know, people in the community that know about us have referred families to us.
And you serve how many counties with your services?
Right now we're doing 7 counties.
So that's a big geographical area.
You know, and the reason for that is it's really funny is because I grew up in Alturas, and so I obviously wanted to be able to help families in a community that I grew up with. And obviously you can't get through to Modoc County without going through Lassen County, so you got to do Lassen County too. And we wanted to go to Siskiyou County and Trinity County and Tehama County. We basically wanted every county that was adjacent to us to be able to receive help from us.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, what is the bedrock inspiration that keeps you going? I know that you spend an enormous amount of time in the foundation and dealing with these families. What is bedrock to you? I mean, what is the specific sense of trigger for inspiration that you get up every morning to want to help people?
You know, it started out as a healing process. When you're grieving over the loss of your child, you know, and you do something like this, we have so many families that thank us for what we do for them, but we actually say we want to thank you for what you do for us, you know, because it's just a huge thing for us to heal, you know, with losing our daughter.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it, too, is the friendship. Is the friendships that we have formed they're so solid. And they're, you know, it's a fraternity that you don't want to be a part of,
mm-hmm.
but you thank God that there's somebody else there mm-hmm. to be with you on it.
And you have some really good community support in terms of fundraisers that have evolved and really contribute significantly to helping those folks. You want to tell us about those fundraising events that you have?
Just a couple of really quick ones that I want to touch on is, you know, we have our Bowl-a-thon, which is our annual Bowl-a-thon, and it's March 31st. It's an event that is completely full at this time. And a portion of the proceeds out of this event goes to a little boy by the name of Lucas Bartsch. Lucas is 14 months old and is battling two forms of cancer. He just had surgery yesterday. It went really well, so we've got some real positive stuff going on with
that. He's a local boy.
He's a local boy from Cottonwood. And also Mary's Pizza Shack. And, I mean, I know everybody knows Mary's is real good to our community. But on the 25th, and we've changed the date, it was on Easter, but now on the 25th, I believe, Sunday of this month, Mary's is doing a fundraiser with a blood drive and everything. That's also for Lucas.
Wonderful.
With 20% going to, you know, to that to his family and that. So we also always have our big spaghetti feed in October, so everybody has to come to Sons of Italy for that.
We pretty much only do two main fundraisers a year, but what's happened is the other local organizations in town have picked up and started helping us.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that wonderful? You spend, obviously, a lot of time on this charitable work. How many hours a week do you feel that you put in helping these families? I get a smile.
Well, let's just say,
like, it's full time.
I was going to say I work at my job for 40 hours a week, but I work at Wings probably more than that.
And you, Dan?
Yeah, it's an ongoing thing. And usually when we're getting close to our main fundraisers, we obviously spend a lot more time. But in the last year, one thing has rolled into another because of the loss of children and new children we're taking on.
Mm-hmm.
It's become almost a full-time job.
Wow. And what vision do you have for the future for Wings of Angels Foundation?
Well, the one thing about Wings, and this is really super important, is our inspiration to the families that have lost children that have wanted to help out also in the community. And this has been big recently, where other families have formed their own organizations.
Really?
For whatever reason. Mm-hmm. You know, and they want to help the community. And to me, that's been one of the biggest things that I love about Wings, is how we've inspired other people to jump in, form their own organizations, and help the community.
Wow, what beautiful words. It's circular, isn't it? Isn't that wonderful?
Henry, where I'd ultimately like to be with Wings of Angels is to, I mean, we're a strong foundation right now, but I want to be a foundation that when a family's going through what they're going through, if they need a car and they don't have one, that we would be able to just get them a car. I mean, ultimately, that would be my goal, is to solve every financial problem that any family had.
And as I understand, North Valley Bank is actually considering upping the contribution in terms of their used cars to the foundation, which is just very gratifying to hear that the community is reaching out to you the way that they have. I want to thank both of you very, very much for coming and sharing your story with our listeners. And we look forward to seeing you at your bowl-a-thons and your spaghetti feeds, and continue your good work.
Thank you. All
in the name of your daughter.
Thank you for having us today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you, Henry, so much.
This is KCNR 1460, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media. We're going to be back shortly with another wonderful guest. Thank you.
Too tired or busy to cook at home or go out to eat? We can bring the restaurant to you. Hi, I'm Jeff from Entree Express. We've been delivering lunch and dinner from your favorite Reading restaurants for 17 years. We can deliver to your home, office, or hotel room. Enjoy your favorites from 25 restaurants by calling Entree Express at 224-9791. That's 224-9791. Or you can Google Entree Express of Reading to find our website.
Presented by the Active 2030 Club of Reading, the Sundial Film Festival, in its fourth year, showcases the talent and diversity of filmmakers and photographers of the North State. Come join us for a night of art, creation, and talent. On March 10th, the all-day event kicks off at 1 p.m. at the historic Cascade Theater. There really is something for everyone to enjoy. Come experience the action, the humor, the animation, and the captivating documentaries. Tickets are available at the Cascade Theater box office or at sundialfilmfestival.com.
Tough times don't have to mean bad times for those who choose to meet the challenges of today's business climate. Every Friday morning on KCNR 1460, we salute the spirit of innovation, discuss new ways of thinking, and celebrate success on Shasta Startup. Join us from 9 to 10 a.m. this Friday to hear how local established businesses, entrepreneurs, and community leaders are stepping up to get the job done. Brought to you by S.J. Denham Motors Chrysler Jeep. Shasta Startup, KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
Welcome back. This is Henry Cuenca, and we're talking to our guests with passion and inspiration. Our next guest you're going to find most intriguing. She is intelligent, compassionate, spiritual, whose profession literally is figuring out how we're going to be looking at things 10 years into the future. She holds degrees from Yale, Trinity College in Dublin, Ireland, with undergraduate studies in religion and psychology. She has worked with Leadership Beyond Boundaries and most recently worked on the TEDx show here in Reading. I want to introduce Rachel Hatch. Welcome to today's show, Rachel.
Thank you for having me, Henry. It's been amazing just to hear the Wings of Angels stories. I've been really inspired already.
Well, thank you. You're originally from the Midwest, mm-hmm. Iowa, mm-hmm. and so I presume that you're a meat and potatoes type of lady.
I like that. Yeah, it's true. I grew up in Cedar Falls, Iowa, and have some family who are farmers and some who are city folk.
So so you have a choice, right? So tell us about yourself. Your family, mm-hmm. what drew you to Reading, and so forth.
Well, we moved here. My husband, Aaron, and I just moved here about a year ago from the Bay Area. And he grew up in Palo Cedro, so he's a hometown boy from
Another
around here.
Guy.
And he did the classic boomerang routine of coming back around after about 10 years
I've heard
away.
Of that before.
And it's nice just to be in a place where we're living closer to family after years of living abroad and in different parts of the U.S. It makes mm-hmm. a big difference in terms of quality of life, I would say.
You know, your college experiences are very, very impressive. Could you tell us about the degrees that you've achieved?
Well, I loved my undergraduate experience at St. Olaf College. It's a small liberal arts school, so there's an emphasis on great books, types of programs, and they have really strong both music and study abroad programs that I got to take advantage of, which allowed me to live in Thailand for a semester program where we studied abroad and were immersed in a culture, lived with a host family. And I think that's been one of the most formative experiences of my life, to have to get into a different place where you're completely out of your element and making all sorts of awkward language mistakes and all
sure,
of that.
Like I do here on the show. tell us about, you went to school, you went to Yale. And received a degree in...
Yeah, it was a Master of Divinity degree. So
uh-huh. Tell us about that.
My interest has been in studying religion. I'm especially interested in how you look at different religions, and even within one religion, how there are people who hold such different views from each other, but still kind of want to be part of the same family, whether it's a church family or...
Human race, right?
Yeah, well, and that's the big frame right. to hold everything in. So I've been intrigued by how people can be a part of that same family in whatever way you define it and still be in conflict with each other. So that mm-hmm. led me to be interested in the conflict, particularly in Ireland and Northern Ireland, between mm-hmm. Catholics and Protestants.
And that's what drew you to Trinity College mm-hmm. in Dublin, huh?
Yep, and I was really lucky. I got to do a Rotary Ambassadorial Scholarship for 1 year there. And mm-hmm. it's a perfect place to study ecumenical studies, which is looking at interchurch relations and interreligious conflict. And that led me to my Master of Divinity studies, where I was looking at thinking about becoming a professor to try to help, break apart what some of the contours of those kinds of conflicts are. And that's just been something that's always intrigued me about.
Well,
religion.
With your educational background, I'm surprised you're not a minister or a pastor or something.
Yeah. So, and when I was in divinity school, I was thinking about becoming a professor, but a lot of my colleagues and friends there were going into ministry, and I guess I feel as I've spent a lot of time talking with those friends, that ministry is sort of like I would compare it to trying to become a professional actor, in the sense that you should only really do it if you can't imagine yourself being yourself and a whole person, who you mm-hmm. really are. Mm-hmm. You should only really do it if you can do nothing other. And I feel like those are the people who I've met that I've been most inspired by, who are really called to ministry and to service in that way.
And you wanted to be a ballerina when you were a young lady. Isn't that right?
That's true. Yeah, I went through the classic, I want to be a ballerina, a doctor, and everything else.
tell us a little bit about your family life. Your parents and brothers and sisters?
Mm-hmm. So my mom is a retired English teacher, and my dad is a reference librarian at the University of Northern Iowa.
Oh, this is where the Studious Foundation came from.
We're all geeks, yep.
Uh-huh.
So and I have one brother, and he's just a bit younger than me, and he's living in Minneapolis, so he's also back in the Midwest.
Who inspired you in your growing up years, in retrospect?
You know, I took a lot of inspiration from my family in terms of the value of education. That's something that was just, you know, liberally laced in our household. There were books strewn everywhere, and I was a big reader. I loved Nancy Drew mystery books when I was growing up. But I also took inspiration from my first mentor in life. Her name is Leah Nichols. She was a deacon in my Episcopal church when I was growing up, also a teacher, and had a heavy role in our community theater, which also had a restoration effort similar to what we had at the Cascade Theater here in town. So I took a lot of inspiration from her as a person who is a woman in leadership. I think that's that can be a challenging position at times.
Now, aside from wanting to be a ballerina, what what did you really think that you were going to end up doing?
You know,
in your adult life,
it's been a journey, but it's been fascinating because I feel like you should just never make plans. I think, you know, as soon as you make a plan, and I'm a planner type of person, so anyone who knows me would be laughing right now.
Yeah.
That I love making plans. I feel like that provides a sense of structure and everything to life. But as soon as you make them, you realize, well, that's just foolish, you know. So I ended up doing something totally different than what I thought I would be doing, which is has been instructive.
And
for
you're and you're okay with that, obviously.
Yeah, no, it's
right?
been great. I think surprises are good.
Your father was also an inspiration to you, I had noted. Was that also on an educational basis?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things I really admire about my dad is he's a you know, Midwestern library type. So you can imagine he's sort of the archetypal librarian. His name is Stanley. He's bespectacled and everything. But he has a way of speaking honestly about things. So when I talked with him about, when I was younger and I was talking with him about religion, he would be quite honest. He would say, you know, I think faith is a struggle for people who are honest. Things like that that are just, they cut to the quick and they're really an honest expression
very
of how we encounter our world and that it's not always easy. So he had a way of saying that quite candidly and that I admired.
Right. Well, obviously you're a very intelligent lady. And, you know, I'm really interested in having you tell us about the company that you work for because, in effect, you do look, your job is looking through a periscope or binoculars 10 years into the future. And I want to get into that as soon as we get back from our break. So don't go away. This is Henry Quinkett at KCNR 1460 Shasta Redding. We'll be back in a second.
A word from R&B Sharpening and Sales.
Well, 26 years ago, we officially opened up on my birthday, November 20th, and just to make it a fun day, you know. My philosophy has been in this thing. We went on the concept that service and quality work going out of that place, or I wouldn't put up with it. If it isn't right, it's not going out with our name on it. The attitude of quality and service has paid off.
R&B Sharpening and Sales, East Side Road, 365-1479.
The Reading Breakfast Lions Club's 30th Annual Gun, Antique, and Collectible Show is this Saturday and Sunday at the Reading Civic Auditorium. All proceeds go to local youth and charitable programs. Over 150 vendors with approximately 300 tables displaying guns, antiques, and collectibles, and unique historical and educational displays. This year, the special historical exhibit is Kilroy World War II Living History Displays of German and Allied Materials. The NorCal Veterans Historical Association will be there with their helicopter and Vietnam and Gulf War area memorabilia. You'll be able to buy, sell, trade, or just browse at 200 years of historical items. The show opens at 9 a.m. both Saturday and Sunday. Admission is $6 for adults. Children under 12 are free. Don't miss it. The Reading Breakfast Lions Club's 30th Annual Gun, Antique, and Collectible Show at the Reading Civic Auditorium. Doors open at 9 a.m. both days this weekend.
Welcome back. This is Henry Cuenca, and I'm with Rachel Hatch, our futurist, And Rachel, before the break, I was going to ask you to tell us about the company you work for and the work that you do, which I think is just most fascinating. So you want to tell us about your company.
Yeah, it's a wonderful place to work. Institute for the Future is the name of it. It's a nonprofit, independent research group based in Palo Alto, California. And we have a mission of helping the public to think more strategically about the longer-term future. And I think everyone who's there, we're a fairly small organization. We're about 40 people, and everyone who's there is committed to a belief that we need to think more systematically about the future in order to be resilient, you know, regardless of who the we is, if it's a family, an individual, if it's an organization or a big corporation. That's something that we can all stand to improve on, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And what's your role?
I'm a research director there, so that means I do part of my time is devoted to researching a few different topics. I'm really interested in how people will connect with each other and how relationships will evolve in the next decade. So I'm trying to think, you know, in the year 2022 right now, thinking about 10 years ahead. Mm-hmm. And I'm also interested in connections between spirituality and health, given my background, you know, health and well-being. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking a lot these days about how that domain will evolve, what kinds of tools and practices we'll be using. Mm-hmm. And whenever we do research, we call them forecasts. It's different from, you know, when you hear Institute from the Future, you think of, you know, a crystal ball or something.
Well, that's what I thought you had in your purse.
So, yeah, I got that. That's my toolkit, yeah. No, we make a distinction between predicting and forecasting. For us, a forecast is a plausible, internally consistent, and provocative view of what might happen. Mm-hmm. And what really makes a forecast practical are the insights that those provocations jar in you as you're beginning to think about that future context.
Could you give us a little glimpse of something that your company has worked on or you are working on now? And to give our listeners a sense of the specific type of things that you're working for us.
Mm-hmm. So one of our projects right now that we're looking at through our Technology Horizons team is looking at the ways in which humans have appropriated technology, and especially the internet technology, over the past 40 or 50 years. We always look back. In order to look forward, we think that hindsight is a really valuable input to foresight.
There's history.
And yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's a non-trivial input. Right. So we look back first, and as we see it, we're kind of in our nascent stages of how we appropriate technology, especially the internet. So you see people struggling with a lot of technology. We're at our computers all day, and we have stress impacts from that, productivity impacts from that, and so on. And what we're scanning for right now are some of the inflection points for how we're beginning to become more adaptive in terms of how we relate to technology, how we use the different applications through the internet to be able to make our lives actually better and to overcome some of the challenges that we've been facing as we're just beginning to learn in the early stages of the internet. We're beginning to learn how it will improve our lives.
And how long has your company been in business?
Since 1968.
Oh, 68. Let me ask you this. It's interesting. 10 years ago, were they thinking about social media the way that we're being consumed by it now?
Yeah, that's definitely,
really?
and that's one of my favorite things to do at the Institute. We have we have some file cabinets where we have our forecasts from, the past decades, and you can go through them, before we had everything digitized and look back at some of the early seeds of the things that we're seeing today. So some of our researchers studied the ARPANET, the precursor to the internet, and they called it group communication through computers, which is really, a crude way of describing, and an early way of describing social media as we know it today, when they were first looking at studies of that. So it's some of the things we've gotten right, some of the things we've gotten wrong.
Of course.
You want to think of it as a predictive sense. But for us, it's really about what kinds of insights the foresight provokes and how we can make better decisions today if we're thinking about the possibility spaces that we might encounter.
Fascinating stuff. You were recently involved with TEDx Reading, which was a new undertaking for us in Reading, which was just a marvelous event, which I attended. Thank you. Can you tell us about TED and tell us about the Catalyst Group that you were involved in bringing TEDx to Reading?
Yeah, Catalyst Reading Young Professionals is a group that's been around for just a couple of years. We're committed to improving and just diversifying, I guess you could say, the cultural offerings that are here. So our motto is, if there's an event that we'd like to attend, we don't want to sit back and complain about how it's not here. We want to make it happen.
And that's proactive.
Part of how TEDx came about. TED.com is the website that, where you can kind of get a preview of all of it.
Can you give us a little overview on TED.com?
Yeah. So their mission as an organization is ideas worth spreading. So they want to take across a whole bunch of disciplines. They want to have people share the nugget of their idea, just get to the essence of it in 18 minutes or less and share that. So it's not like you're listening to a professor do a semester-long exposition on something. It's really just, here's the essence of my idea, and if it were spread more, if more people knew about it, it would presumably make the future a better place.
I've watched TED myself for some time now, and some of the presentations, in fact, nearly all of the presentations are just profound.
Yeah, it's addictive.
Oh, absolutely. Down in Monterey, and the speakers are international. They come from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they are just such an inspiring show. It really is. So we're going to need to take a break right now, but I do want to come back more on the Reading TEDx undertaking. So again, this is KCNR 1460, Shasta Reading, the home of Free Fire Media. Don't go away.
You got to make the morning last, just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling groovy.
Hi, I'm Amy Rogers. I'm a certified massage therapist with a bachelor's degree in kinesiology. I've worked with a broad spectrum of clients that have a variety of needs. I like to help people get rid of their physical pain so they can enjoy their lives. You can find me at Dr. Trudy Pratt's office at 244-7873. Most insurance is accepted. Number again is 244-7873. Let this be the year that you care for yourself.
This is Carl Bott. I'm with Chef John Stadelli right here at Anselmo Vineyards. I'm back in the kitchen.
Hey, good morning, Carl. Thanks for stopping by.
Well, you know, I love it here. What's on the menu for today?
Today we're rolling out some special raviolis for Gremavalia.
Beef, raviolis, salad, fish. You know, if you go to Anselmo's, it's going to be a superb meal.
Always made fresh with a ton of passion.
Well, that's why we like dining there.
Anselmo Vineyards, just a short drive from Palisadro. Anselmo Vineyards, it will become your favorite destination getaway.
Everywhere around the world.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Woodward.
And Aaron Ryan.
We'd like to have you join us on Sunday mornings from 8 to 10 a.m. on KCNR 1460 for We the People Talk Radio. We are all things fiscal responsibility, limited government, and adherence to the Constitution.
You know what? We've done programs on federal and state land use issues, governmental overreach, family values behind the green mask, Second Amendment and other constitutional issues, technocracy and the smart grid, the monetary system, of course, spending, taxes, and debt, topics that fall under We the People. We want to know what topics you would like to hear about. Email Aaron at wethepeopleradio.us for more information. Bust on to wethepeopleradio.us, and the archives are there for your listening pleasure.
We the People Radio, bringing to you topics that affect you no matter where you live. Come join the previously silent majority.
See you Sunday.
We the People, Sunday mornings 8 to 10 on AM 1460 KCNR.
Welcome back. I'm going to divert our questions here. We did have a chat question come in to our prior guest, Donna. And one of our callers essentially wants to know about the age limits of the those that you serve.
We'll help a family. If a person is under 21 years of age when they're diagnosed, we'll help them. And a lot of cancer treatments, because they go for a couple of years, we'll continue to help them until they're finished with their treatment. So if they're 21 when we start helping them and their treatment doesn't finish until they're 23, we'll be there for them.
Okay, very good. Back to our exciting guest, Rachel Hatch. Rachel, we were talking about Reading X here in Reading. Tell us how that was all started.
So the TED.com, you know, the TED organization, right, has decided in recent years to open source their format. Mm-hmm. So they provide a toolkit and resources and support for local organizers of events that are kind of TED-like in nature. Mm-hmm. And they did this, they called it TEDx, and behind the X you fill in the blank with whatever location you're in. So TEDx Tokyo, TEDx San Jose. This is the first TEDx Reading that we had this year. And we're really excited to have it in the area because there are some interesting local speakers.
Very, very interesting. Absolutely.
Yeah, right. Who can give voice to ideas we're spreading that have grown, you know, right here out of the Reading community.
Let me ask you, is there going to be a follow-up presentation by TEDx?
Yes,
Reading?
We are in the planning stages, thinking about next year and taking back.
So it took root.
We've been really pleased by the feedback from people. The words that people have used to describe it are that it was energizing. Some people said that Reading was it was something Reading was aching for or yearning for, which made us really gratified to hear.
It was a wonderful performance. I noticed, I read that some of your company's work involved understanding empathy with people, and you wouldn't normally think of a company doing research on empathy, but can you explain that to us?
Yeah, you know, we are a cross-disciplinary group, so we look at questions, research questions like that from a lot of different perspectives. We had anthropologists on staff, technologists, you know, people who are like me, who are more in the social science kind of realm. And so we're, with empathy in particular, some of the research we're tracking is around the neuroscience of empathy. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, the mirror neurons that function in both of us as we're sitting across from each other in the radio studio, and just how in the next decade, as we learn more and more about how our brains function, that we'll have the ability to find kind of new leverage points in our own systems, in our bodies, to be able to augment some of the capacities that we wish we were perhaps better at. So, for instance, being empathic human beings, working together collaboratively in groups. So that's a whole research domain that has opened up, that's complexifying the way that we may have previously described, you know, how two people or how a group relates with each other.
Mm-hmm. Very, very interesting. What is the brainchild of, how did this company of yours get started? I mean, what was the incubator for them?
So we were a spinoff of the RAND Corporation, and the folks who especially wanted to start the Institute were interested in doing non-classified research. So they wanted to make sure that the time and energy and expertise that we put into the research and an aggregating expert opinion would be available to the public. So that's a big commitment of our organization. All the research that we do, we have some client supporters, and after a year of their having sort of early access of the research to the research, it goes public, and that's something that's really a commitment that the Institute has had for a long time.
Rachel, given the fact that your focus is really down the road 10 years from now, I gather then that you folks don't really track some of the social evolvement, right, that we currently find ourselves in, or do you?
Well, one of the things that we're tracking right now, you know, in any time you're looking at the future, there are seeds of change in the present, right? And so we're constantly scanning for what we call signals or early indicators of future directions of change. So some of the social unrest that we're seeing around the world, you know, from the Occupy movement to the Arab Spring and everything in between, not that there's too many direct comparisons to be made between those two movements, but there are certainly cross currents that are interesting to track. And we think that part of what we're seeing at the seeds of change of today in those movements will impact particularly governance and forms of organizations in the next decade. So as there's this kind of leveling effect that's happening through people having more access to information, increased transparency, and so on,
but
that will disrupt our current organizational formats, and that includes our governments as well.
You know, you have such a strong religious, or I'm not really right quite sure the exact word, but a spiritual or religious background, mm-hmm. which is extensive. Normally, you wouldn't think of a company really recruiting folks like yourself, right? But how does that feed into what you're providing to your employer?
Well, we're just at the stage of beginning to scope out our practice area, I guess you could say, around spirituality and religion. Certainly it's something that impacts when you do a scan of anything political or economic globally. There, religion certainly plays a large role, especially in conflict. So we're just beginning to kind of scope out that practice. But the reason I ended up at the Institute was because I was in divinity school and in that stage of looking at PhD programs, when one of my mentors, Pam Wesley Gomez, there said, there's a person coming to campus to speak. His name is Bob Johansson, and you have to go listen to him because you think just like him, but you just don't know it yet. And I thought that was kind of an odd thing for her to say, but I went to hear him speak, and he's a distinguished fellow at Institute for the Future. And it was synchronistic, so I ended up there, and I'm happy to be there.
Wow. Well, I wish we had more time with you, Rachel. Very, very interesting lady and the company that you do and your work and your background. And I thank you very much for being a guest
on
our show today. And so we're signing off for the